Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Keep breathing.
Yeah. I just mute myself.
Yeah. It's Tuesday, which means no, it's not time for TF3, but we've got to do the review anyway, so let's get down to it. Joining me today, two other people, as Adam's gone to see Rogue One for the 9th time in 2 days. Thankfully, his local Cine World has got an offer on, and it's that he becomes the Rogue One. I don't know what I'm saying. Dave, you don't feel well, but welcome back.
Thanks, Lawrence. Yeah, Adam has got a serious problem. Probably should go to maybe a psychiatrist. Oh. 9 times is mental.
Yeah, I mean, he wants to be Darth Vader. There's no joke there. He actually does just want to rule the universe. Very sad, actually. Dave, you've not been well over Christmas at all. Do you want to hashtag that, pray for Dave?
Yeah. Make Dave better in 2017.
Good. Have you already used that?
No, not yet, Lawrence. I'm waiting for somebody else to start it. Don't look like too much of a penis.
Make Dave great again.
Yeah, that might be better. Like, make America. Maybe we should get Donald Trump as the head of our campaign.
Yeah.
If he's not too busy running the United States.
I mean, who hasn't ever thought inserting Donald Trump into this situation will not make it better?
Exactly.
Another man who wants to insert Donald Trump inside himself. It's good to have you, Chris.
It's good to be had.
By Donald Trump, US Secretary General for on the podcast, Chris joins us. Chris, the news tonight is that the only American that ever existed has finally left the Premier League, Bob Bradley, after 11 games and 2 wins, 2 draws and 7 losses.
Mm.
Fair?
Realistically, yeah, this is the thing. We always look for black and white conclusions. The tweet that I would condense this to is, Bob Bradley was the right man for the wrong time.
Right. A bit like when Morecambe and Wise are playing the right notes, not necessarily in the right order.
Exactly. Oh, that's a wonderful reference. You've genuinely made my heart warm with that reference.
Good.
Essentially, and we talked about this before, he was trying to be a little bit too expansive. Also, that squad is one of the worst squads I think's ever been in the Premier League.
What?
So really, I genuinely think it is. I think it's one of the worst. In the heart of midfield is a man in Leroy Fer that's been relegated, I think, 3 seasons in a row.
Classic.
So it's just ridiculous. I think, or he's on course to be, I think, if that's right. Yeah, Norwich, QPR. Yeah. So anyway, the squad is not very good. In an ideal world, if you Bob Bradley, you think, well, okay, I'll get till January and then I'll make some additions and swap a few things around.
We'll get Michael over and everything will be fine.
Well, I think ultimately the Swansea top brass looked at it and said, we can't afford to take that risk. From things that I'm hearing with people closer to the club, Bradley really wasn't wanted from the first instance anyway by some of the higher-ups, so they weren't willing to work with them and provide him the support structure he needed. So ultimately, it means he's fighting not just against those on the pitch, but he's fighting against his own people off it, which is, again, it's a bit ridiculous. I think what you can say in the wider context of this, the bigger picture, is that it's also revealed a little bit of mild xenophobia in the Premier League about who can and who can't play this game and who can be involved. It's all a bit awkward.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird, isn't it, Dave? We'll get back to that in just a second. But I did also see some other tweets that maybe said, look, and maybe it's sort of right, and Chris, I think Chris is alluding to it in that sense. Bob Bradley is a good coach, but he's not necessarily the right coach for a relegation-bound Swansea team who maybe need a different kind of motivation that isn't the all-encompassing Bob Bradley lifestyle motivation. It's more the myopic us against them, Sam Allardyce kind of motivation.
Yeah, I think that's what it's got to be. You know, there is managers in the Premier League that can keep you up. You know, the likes of Tony Pulis, the Sam Allardyce that organise, that restructure you, and it doesn't look like Bob Bradley's coming and done that at Swansea. Like Chris was saying, they're far too open. They're looking at how to score goals over how to defend first, and unfortunately, with Swansea's record, well, I think they've conceded 29 goals in 11 games. Firstly, he's got to like, shore up the back before even looking at how he can improve the likes of Gylfi Sigurdsson, Bohan Baston, or Fernando Llorente. He's had a pretty decent spell under Bob Bradley, so whoever's coming in's got a pretty decent striker if he uses him to his strengths. You know, a target man, hit the ball to him early, get crossed into the box. But it's the defence first, and it's just not good enough. Losing Ashley Williams was massive. They didn't replace him. They tried to look inside the club. There was no one there, and that's a big... For the next manager, that's a big thing. First up, get a centre-back to, you know, bring the leadership that Ashley Williams brought when he was there. So it's a big thing for the next guy. Defensive organisation, sign a centre-back, and then look to build on your attack.
It's part of the problem, Dave. He lost 4-1 to another manager that you thought would get sacked first.
I think Bilic has gone through a little spell of having some pretty decent fixtures. You know, they beat Burnley at home 1-0. Burnley have what the worst record in the Premier League away from home. Then they beat Hull, another team that's probably going to get relegated. And then they had Swansea City. So they've gone on a pretty... they've gone on a good run, obviously 9 points from 3 games, and that's fair play to Bilic and turning the form around. And, you know, having the likes of Andre Ayew back into the side is going to be crucial because he is a goal-scoring midfielder, and that's why they bought him for the goals. And his link-up with Andy Carroll was very, very good against Swansea. But then you got the likes of Payet back on that left-hand side and Antonio on the other. Both of those two wingers, we haven't seen that often either. You know, he's been playing right wing-back, he's been playing right-back, Mikel Antonio. And he's been huge, absolutely huge for Bilic last season and this season. Since the start of last season, he scored 16 goals. That's 5 more than any other West Ham player. So, yeah, credit to Bilic. You know, what you've got to hold your hands up when a manager turns form around, well played, because... It's a big thing. Again, switching momentum is one of the hardest things in football, and that's what Bob Bradley didn't do. What the next guy is going to have to do is really change the momentum of the side and the belief. He needs to, you know, get the guys hyped and go back to the believing in the Swansea way, which is something that maybe Bob Bradley moved away from in terms of their ball playing and how, you know, how they matched up against sides. So it will be a big, big task, and it's something I hate to go into Swansea and take that job, because as Chris mentioned, the squad is quite poor.
So what I was going to say, Chris, is... I mean, you know, it's all well and good getting rid of Bob. And, you know, we've sort of brushed upon the anti-American rhetoric, which there was. I did find it very weird that a couple of pundits, especially a couple of pundits I've worked with before, who, you know, we know how easy they are to sort of influence if you plant an idea in their mind. But a few of them, you know, they were giving Bob Bradley a hard time for losing to a couple of guys and sort of saying, oh, I didn't see anything in what Bob had done. I just feel like there's a lot of lazy. Just seem lazy.
Massively. I think Gabby Don typifies that. To come out with some of the stuff he said, it's, again, you know, whether he's knowingly being obtuse because he's ex-Cardiff and, you know, why not poke Swansea a little bit like that. I just thought that goes back to what I said before about the idea of who can and who can't be involved. It, for me, again, it was exemplified by this talk about, well, you know, why isn't Ryan Giggs given the job when Ryan Giggs has no coaching experience? And people talk about Bob as if, again, he's just won some competition or, you know, he had won MLS Cup once. This is someone that's been around and, you know, talking to some people that know him really well, I don't think he'll be too upset about this, really. I think he'll go away, dust himself down and come back again. Again, as much as we might want to talk about his frailties and his deficiencies, I think they're very clear to see, which is he's got a way of playing and that really for him a fairly basic style of play or one that's defensively focused is not him. And that lack of flexibility, I think, will hurt him moving forward. I think he's going to have to go away and try and work out if he's willing to make that concession moving forward, if it's something he considers he can do, because I think it's going to help him massively to get another job in a prominent league if he can do that. But also, the detractors on that side of things, they've come out with some just ridiculous things. Absolutely ridiculous. I haven't seen, even now, I haven't seen one piece that talks about what he was doing wrong or that actually critiques him as a manager. Everything I saw is about Bob Bradley, the American who uses funny words.
Yeah, I did find that all very weird. And as funny as the word soccer is, I mean, just because it sounds like cocker does not mean that we should make fun of it, guys. All right? Bob's a lovely guy. Go back and listen to the interview, which now we can, retrospectively say we were going to recut completely, essentially, and just completely stitch Bob up. But we worked out that it's best not to do that because Bob's a nice guy. So good. Next up, Swansea play Bournemouth, and Bournemouth got an absolute thrashing from Chelsea, who sit top of the league, Dave. The Angels of Christmas, led by seemingly King Herod, did all right without Diego Costa and N'Golo Kanté.
Yeah, but again, Conte's making his money and making the correct decisions. Putting Pedro as a false nine, was massively involved in the last goal, scored the first goal. Yeah, a bit of a deflection, but Pedro played well through that game, led the press very well. And then obviously replacing Kanté in midfield with Cesc Fabregas, a creator that can, you know, push your team forward in the final third against a very defensive Bournemouth side. So again, he did so well, and Hazard's form has just been so impressive this season, considering how bad he was towards the back end of last season. But I think we saw some crunch moments again from Courtois. He made a really big save when it was 1-0 to Chelsea. On I think it might have been a Phoebe or one of the forwards from Bournemouth going forward. A really good low save, but it's credit to Conte, because it's, you know, what, 12 wins in a row, nearly what one off the Arsenal record, and, you know, beat Spurs on the first or second or something of January, and then they'll beat that record. But it is interesting how he moves his squad around, and we spoke about every part of the side, but it is that constant move and the ability to bring someone like Willian in, who had a very, very good game as well. The front three were fantastic for Chelsea: Pedro, Willian and Hazard. I think that's how they pushed forward and won the game. Hazard in the game completed 13 dribbles. It's absolutely incredible. That's the most he's managed in like 2 years. So he was really pumped up for the game. Really took it to Bournemouth, and it was just unbelievable seeing Hazard in full flow.
Yeah, and he was in full flow. Bournemouth at times, I mean, they did the right things essentially, didn't they, Dave? I mean, I know they conceded goals, but there were times where they just sort of, you saw them just throw their arms down and sort of be like, well, we've done what we were supposed to, and Chelsea have still scored a goal.
Yeah, I think that defensively they looked half decent, and again, you know, the first goal was a heavy deflection, but then you got to look at the penalty. Yeah, you know, committing a foul on Eden Hazard anywhere on the pitch isn't a bad thing, but maybe in the box that you just give him that extra yard and maybe let one of your teammates come over and try and double man mark him in the box, or, you know, think a bit more, because it was a little bit rash, the penalty incident, and that obviously completely killed the game for Chelsea. And, you know, it's pretty much, Chelsea can defend the one goal lead for 90 minutes. If you give them a two goal lead, it's game over, right?
Pretty much, correct. and they did it without, like I say, Diego Costa and N'Golo Kanté. That does leave Chelsea top of the table. Again, Chris, 6 points clear going into the next round of games. The form side, or the side who actually have a system which is unbeatable in this league, Chris?
Can we deviate just briefly?
Oh, go for it.
Because it looks as if Sami and Nasri's been Twitter hacked.
Oh, no, brilliant. Go on. He's not tweeting stuff about Man City, is he?
There's a company called Drip Doctors. And they provide IV vitamin therapy. So kind of they plug an IV into you, and I assume the mixture of minerals and everything helps you recover. Totally above board. I don't know if there's anything illegal with it all. And they put up a tweet with a picture of Nasri and one of their nurses that said, "We've provided Sami Nasri a concierge immunity IV drip to keep him hydrated and in top health during his busy soccer season with Sevilla FC." The official Sami Nasri account then quote tweeted that and said, "You also provided me a full sexual service too right after. So guys, make sure you get this service. This whore comes and bleep the same night."
Wow.
Now, I don't think Samia wrote this.
You know what? It's one of the few times I'm questioning it.
It doesn't sound like something Samia would say.
You're right. Not openly.
I mean, I don't even think you can get away with the Julian Lescott defence, can you? That it was just in your pocket. I mean, his phone, not anything, you know. I don't know. Yeah. So there's that. Discuss.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, the problem is it's not Samir, is it? He's just been hacked. I don't really want to go into Twitter hacking right now. It feels very uncomfortable.
Is it hacking if your girlfriend posts it?
Is it hacking if you're Julian Lescott and it just happens to be in your pocket and perfectly types out an abusive 140 characters at the set of fans that you happen to be playing for? Very awkward. Dave, you ever been hacked?
No, I've been watching Mr. Robot though on the old box recently, and it's really good.
It's about
a hacker that tries to take down the world and make it better for everyone. But it gets quite like psychologically interesting towards the back end of the series with, you know, some heavy schizophrenia references. But it's quite interesting, a guy's battle with himself and the internet.
Westworld, Mr. Robot, there are some good series out there at the moment. Would you enjoy more, Westworld or Mr. Robot?
Westworld. Definitely.
I'm half an hour away from finishing it. Brilliant. An exploration. Expect a full YouTube vlog about the football version at some point. Chris, you ever been hacked?
Been hacked ever? Yes.
Have you? Chris?
I have. My PayPal was once hacked, and someone was sending money. I can't remember where, somewhere in the Middle East, if I remember correctly. They were doing it through phone cards or something, and then a former partner once hacked my Facebook and started sending abusive messages to any girl that I was talking to.
I'm sorry about that, Chris. I'm very, very sorry.
So I can very much potentially, maybe, theoretically, allegedly, relate with somebody.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the girlfriend thing, obviously. No, I haven't had an IV drip.
Yeah. I mean, you let them put other things. All right. Anyway, let's move on before one of us sues what the other one. That? Yeah. good. You sort of throw me there. Chelsea sits top of the table. Tactically, Chris, before we took diversion, I was basically asking you, what do you think of them being top of the table and being so good?
They are very good. I was talking to Eric Ronaldo about this late last night on his wonderful Sirius show. And I was saying one of the important things that I feel as if Conte has done, and it's one of those quotes that trails him every time, the idea of how important his words are, how influential his words are. I feel as if he's given purpose to every member of the squad. So, for example, we talk about Victor Moses and Marcus Alonso, these two players that really didn't have, it seems, integral roles at the start of the season. And now they're seen as the sort of prime examples of, look what he's done, they're huge, important components. I don't think it stops there. Nemanja Matic is doing an important role in the heart of midfield. Even David Luiz, he's now found this perfect spot where he's sort of a libero type sweeper who you know, tidies up at the back, but then brings the ball out and finds very dangerous spots. And just in general, it seems, whether by luck or design, Conte has found a system that really puts every single player in the best spot. There doesn't seem to be any sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here?
There doesn't seem to be a flaw in the system which particularly lets them down in that sense.
Almost any concession, almost any compromise, that's the word I was looking for, any compromise for players who have to change the way they play to fit into the system. That's one of the greatest things I think you can say about him. And honestly, I was watching you, Max, that did a really good video on Conte's tactical style with Chelsea and how it works and explaining it. And I find it very interesting.
Dave, didn't you do a little...
Yeah, the UMaxit one's good, but they positionally they get a lot of things that they. The things that annoy me about shit like that is when you talk about tactics and you talk about things, get players in the right positions. Like, for example, it seems like a tiny thing, and it seems like I'm being a grumpy old sod, but Gary Cahill has been playing on the left hand side of the three, and Aspilicueta has been playing on the right hand side of the three. Matic usually plays on the left hand side, Conte on the right hand side. It's big things like that that they just put in the wrong place. And I was just like, guys, come on, you made a good video. Just don't. It's the little details with tactics, like, that makes a massive impact because of the side. Obviously, you know, just to talk about that, the left-hand side is defensive because Hazard stays on the counter-attack. You know, Cahill has a big, big job to do on that left-hand side. Alonso tucks in and Aspilicueta brings the ball out of the right-hand side and they, you know, and they already have the Pedro being defensive and Moses being defensive. It's a big things like that that just need a little bit more detail. If we're going to dive into that topic. But yeah, I did an all right video. It was okay.
Which is why Dave Talks is worth going and subscribing to, where Dave actually systematically takes apart other YouTubers based on their technical deficiencies.
What I was going to say was, in relation to that video, is looking at the system and the way it operates, granted there are some issues with the video that Dave's wonderfully outlined there, I don't see where the glaring weakness is and how you really sort of get at this Chelsea side in the same way. It would almost seem to me, and this is just a sort of initial gut reaction, that you've got to try and transition quickly on them. But even then, it requires you, I imagine, to almost match them up, which I can't imagine many teams have had that opportunity to prepare and practice for. So
that's what I was thinking, yeah.
It's a very good system. I mean, again, Dave is very much the tactician in our ranks. So if there's a glaring thing that I'm missing here, then I'm eager to hear it.
I'd potentially play Diamond against them. I think the Chelsea formation isn't really a 3-4-3. I think it's more of a 5-4-1, and it's kind of going back to the old school days of you know, Bayern Munich 2001, let's say, where they had like Giovanni Elbert through the middle and they were supported by Salihamidžić and I can't remember who's on the other side. But it's a similar tactic to that. And in that sort of time of football, it was diamonds versus that 5-4-1. And that was sort of the battle. So maybe a diamond, because if you think about the system, you got the front three that potentially will trap back. But it's pretty much you're going to create a 4v2 in the middle of the park because they got the two holding midfielders. You're stacking an attacking midfielder in there, a defensive midfielder in there, two centre mids in there. Obviously, those two centre mids are going to have to work out wide. They're going to have to close down the wing backs at times. But it could work. It's sort of similar to Mourinho in Serie A when he first moved there, and sort of he was playing that system. He was playing a sort of, you know, a 4-4-2 diamond or a 4-3-1-2, whatever you want to call it. And I like a team to play that against Chelsea and just go very, very narrow against them and see if they can handle those that you know, that overload in the centre of the park.
Yeah, good point. That overload could be provided by an overloading Stoke City. I'm joking. Chelsea are playing Stoke City next, who liked to challenge Liverpool early on and then later on basically just capitulated as Lallana led from midfield, got Liverpool a goal which roused them in the second half. And then Liverpool went on to dominate the rest of the game, despite Peter Crouch and Jonathan Walters leading what looked like a more enterprising and maybe slightly tweaked version of what we've known of Mark Hughes at Stoke City. Mignolet and Lovren looked culpable for the goal that Stoke City did manage to get, and the Liverpool press was completely bypassed by the long ball, which I imagine Pep Guardiola in the crowd was observing and making even more notes on, as he remembers Jurgen Klopp from the Bundesliga days. That's not a band. That is actually just his days back in the Bundesliga. Firmino was arrested for drink driving. Anyone else up on that?
What an idiot. Yeah. How many times, how many footballers, how many people drink driving? It's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Crazy shit.
But he still played.
Don't do it. Don't be stupid. Just get a taxi or walk home. If you've drank that much, you probably deserve a walk in the cold. Anyway, let's move on.
Dave, a man who's walked in the cold a fair bit.
That's Dave's Christmas message. keep everyone happy.
To be fair, Dave, it's not a bad one.
Yeah, it's got a real life lesson to it.
Yeah, walk in the cold. Liverpool they don't look as hungry and fresh as they did earlier in the season, but that's arguably because they've not been able to rotate the way that maybe a Jurgen Klopp side would like to. And we're seeing the limitations of James Milner at wing back. He often needs a safety blanket of someone to pass to in midfield. Maybe Gini Wijnaldum was that for Liverpool against Stoke. And there are still some deficiencies within this side, not least that at times they just look utterly naive. And sometimes in the way that Jurgen Klopp was talking about Liverpool sort of playing with their gut or playing and sort of knowing what to do, the problem is the players don't particularly know what to do when they're challenged with maybe new challenges. And they don't look quite as buccaneering as they did at times last season. Maybe that's where Klopp enjoyed the winter break. More on that at another time. Although Pulis would have been very proud of the front two of Peter Crouch and Jonathan Walters. Peter Crouch seemingly looking for a move in January as essentially Mark Hughes said, you know, he wants more time to play. Where would he fit in, guys? Where would you send Peter, considering how well he did actually hold up the ball and provide more options for Stoke?
I could see him going to somewhere like Brighton. I think he'll have to go to the Championship. I don't think he'll have a Premier League offer. I could see someone who wants to try and boost their promotion hopes, maybe giving them 6 months.
Dave?
A guy's come back into the Premier League that likes to play long ball football, likes to get the ball in the box. He's already got Benteke, but I think a strike force of Christian Benteke and Peter Crouch, that's going to fire Crystal Palace to the Champions League, I think.
Don't piss me off, Dave. Although that's not a bad idea under Sam Allardyce. You know what, let's just go for it now. You've mentioned it now, Dave. Big Sam is back. Big Sam is back. Big Sam is back. Pardew is gone, Dave. Big Sam is back.
Alan Fraudew, you mean? Absolutely unbelievable. Christian Benteke costing Sam Allardyce 2 points with a terrible penalty. It was a good game, actually. I quite enjoyed the first, I think it was the first about 75 minutes. The game was played at quite a nice intensity. Palace were really good in the first half. Kabaye, you know, bags of movement, playing sort of as a number 10 or, you know, in a midfield three with Flamini holding, then Kabaye next to Jason punching. But Kabaye was the guy with the license to go forward. Zaha, again, was, you know, at his tricky best. Townsend had a very good game, a brilliant assist for the Kabaye goal. But the Watford defending for that goal was shocking. Yunus Kabul, an absolute, you know, he was playing Kabaye on from, you know, the other side of the pitch. It was just embarrassing. But then Watford came back into the game after Palace missed that penalty. And they probably deserve to win the game, to be quite honest. Deeney coming on and making a pretty big impact off the bench. But it was sort of a game of Palace dominating the first maybe 60 minutes and then Watford dominating the rest. But it was a good introduction for Sam Allardyce. They didn't lose the game, but they could have won it. And it was definitely 2 points dropped following that dodgy penno. But one stat, Aurelio Gomez in the Premier League has saved, I think he's saved, or maybe it's in his career, or it saved something like 9 out of 30 penalties, which is absolutely crazy. 1 in 3. What a joke.
That's like every penalty that one of us takes, he saves.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Wouldn't be one of my penalties.
No.
It was quite interesting after the game. He was like, yeah, I will... Before the game, I watched Christian Benteke because I knew he was going to be the penalty take to it. So I watched his style. And I realised that he's got a really, like, lazy run-up and he slows himself down and he waits for the keeper to go. So what I did was I just stood there and I waited for him to, you know, waited for him to stroll to the ball slowly, made his move and then just saved it. And it was just like, yeah, of course, Aurelio. Like, it's easy as pie, isn't it, mate?
Of course you have, mate. Of course you have. Weird. Although, yeah, didn't he also save two penalties? Isn't Aurelio Gomez one of a few goalkeepers who saved two penalties in a match?
I think so. Was it with Watford last year or the start of this season?
I think it was either the start of this season or the end of last. I think it was the start of this season. I can't remember who it was against, though. But two penalties saved. And I think he may have also given away at least one of those.
He gave away the one against Palace. You think if someone played a dodgy back pass off through ball and he just absolutely went through Zaha completely. Or was it Benteke?
The pluses and minuses of having Aurelio Gomez. He will give a penalty away. He will save a penalty. Yeah, like having one of those boyfriends who consistently fucks up but also buys you lovely shit. Chris, we've hit peak Sam Allardyce seemingly in the Premier League before, but how soon will Crystal Palace peak and become Peakadice?
Do you mean in terms of what, not losing games or kind of the frustration where fans want him out?
Good question. What is peak Sam Allardyce? My definition of peak Sam Allardyce is the point where you absolutely just want to knock out all of the Palace players because they've just become the walking embodiment of what Sam Allardyce, the worst of what you believe Sam Allardyce is.
I mean, he is efficient. This is the thing. I don't think he would keep getting work. If he was a bad coach, in the same way that Pulis gets work because there is a consistent supply of clubs that get desperate when they start to fear relegation. The problem is he hits his plateau relatively quickly, I would say.
Is this speaking every now and from again, experience, Chris?
Well, I think every now and again he might be able to get Europe on a really good year. The difficulty is, I think, is he's got, as he's become older, Allardyce, I think he's become a little bit more entrenched in things. And so, really, his achievements are keeping teams up. They're not actually getting up the league, if that makes sense. So, it's things like keeping Sunderland up. It's getting West Ham promoted, things like that. It's not really, oh, well, we drastically improved the way this team played and, you know, they made massive strides and a lot of young players came through. It's very much short-term goals rather than long-term achievement. And I think that's where fans get a little bit tired of Allardyce because ultimately everybody wants to have a plan. Everybody wants to feel like you're going in a direction. And sometimes with Allardyce, the long-term direction doesn't seem that prevalent.
Good. Very good point. Although they seem to believe that at Palace and they seem to believe they are doing something in the long term under Sam Allardyce.
Well, he's not progressive. I think he was billed as progressive, wasn't he?
In what way? Like prog rock?
I mean, long-winded.
Yeah.
This will get very niche very quickly because I don't imagine we have many prog rock fans or Yes fans on the podcast listening.
No.
But I don't think he's progressive. I think ultimately that was something that Steve Parish just said to put it out there. Realistically, he wants to survive in the Premier League because I think this is the thing with each passing year, maintaining that status becomes vital. Because of the cash cow that it is. And in a funny way, I would hope now that clubs start to invest less in these massive players and look at it as a great way to be able to buy talent they couldn't afford a few years ago and actually use it in a more sort of constructive, long-term, conscious, not what's the word I'm looking for here, kind of, the opposite of frivolous, essentially. Use it in a way that allows you to build infrastructure and things like that. Things sure. That have long-term kind of success.
Actual, tangible, long-term results. That man was the manager of England. There you go.
He would have won the World Cup.
In 1966. Dave, do you actually think, you know what, let's not go down that route.
Let's not do that.
Yeah, it depresses me.
Yeah, 100%, Lawrence. He's I think the style of football, you know, against the tiki-taka of Spain, the defensive masterclass of Italy, it's just...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Blimey, who thought to a big man score some goals?
Yeah. Sam Allardyce would actually argue that's reductionist of his style, but I'll leave that to Sam. Hull City, a tale of two cities here, guys. Hull City, 0, Man City, 3. Chris, interesting to see De Bruyne point to Iheanacho where to run before he passed it to Silva.
Yeah, it's the very embodiment of thinking a few steps ahead. He's a very good player, De Bruyne. I really enjoy him. It's been fun to watch his progression from Chelsea to Wolfsburg to now. In terms of this game, again, it was very plucky from Hull. But honestly, I came away just thinking, yeah, they're relegated, which is something I've thought for a while. It's not really a massive reflection on Mike Phelan. I think he likely took the job partially because of the opportunity it presented, and also a little bit of an emotional response to the fact that they'd done well in the beginning and it seemed like the players were behind him. All the love in the world is not going to make up for the fact that it's a very small squad with very minimal quality. That's the biggest problem. And even if they went mad in January and spent all of the TV money or something like that, I think by that point you're going to struggle to integrate those players mid-season when everyone else has got their momentum and keep yourselves up.
Yeah, good point. Man City, though, march on. They play Liverpool on New Year's Eve. Dave, just a quick word on Man City playing Liverpool. Do you think Pep's going to not regress? Do you think he'll go back to some of those old blueprints that he originally drew out in Bundesliga against Klopp?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a Manchester City win, unfortunately. I think that it'll be a similar approach to how Pep played Chelsea, I think, with potentially looking at...
That went well.
De Bruyne a false nine, you never know. But I think, yeah, unfortunately, I think this could be where Liverpool's title challenge falls away.
Why would it be where the title challenge fell away?
Maybe momentum, isn't it? I think Liverpool have got to build on this period now. You know, they've got some big games coming up, obviously Manchester United at Old Trafford, but then Manchester City as well. They are big games, but I feel like I think United will stifle Liverpool's attacking.
They did last time, didn't they?
Momentum, yeah. I think that's the thing. But it probably will be a 0-0 draw that game, but I think it could be the Pep Klopp battle that really costs Liverpool in this title race.
Interesting. Also considering where Pep sits in relative terms to Klopp,
it's a big game for. Pep, of course, you know, it's more important at the moment. And I think when he's backed against the wall, I think you find that you do get a Guardiola that sometimes does go back to his basics, like you're saying, and doesn't think too much. Because I think that's the problem over the last few years. He's thinking too much, you know, the use of inverted fullbacks, the use of players in funny positions. When he goes back to basics and he plays the 4-3-3 that won Barcelona so many trophies, that's when you see the best Pep Guardiola. I think he will do that against Liverpool. He'll match them in midfield.
Good. I'm down for that. Dave, while I'm with you, let's talk a little bit about Manchester, the other half, at the red half. Manchester United 3, Sunderland 1. Manchester United proving... we've already done that one about David Moyes. Is this the positive run that people have been waiting for?
Yeah, I think United have been on a good run for about a month and a half now, maybe 2 months, where, you know, it's only just been sort of picked up by the media. They're unbeaten in the league since the Chelsea defeat. Obviously, that was a big defeat. But they're finally starting to put some wins together, beating Spurs, beating Palace, beating West Brom and beating Sunderland. Well, you know, expected wins. Wins, if you want to be in the top four, you've got to beat those sides. But, you know, United are looking very, very good. Ibrahimovic, again, had a very good first half, a very good last 10 minutes of the game, but struggled in that second half. Just the ball wasn't sticking to him, wasn't creating anything. But when he got back into that moment, back into being Ibrahimovic, you know, taking his chances, being cool in front of goal, it was quality. And Paul Pogba already has got a very, very good relationship with him. And with Henrik Mkhitaryan getting back to fitness, he's just so, so good at carrying the ball. And I think that's something United lacked in that first half, was someone driving with the ball in midfield. It was a bit too easy for Sunderland to defend against United because they didn't have to commit any bodies to the ball and thus opening up space elsewhere. But as soon as Pogba started driving with it, Mkhitaryan comes on, you know, United start to rock and, you know, go and score three goals. And the third goal was a thing of beauty, obviously offside, but United haven't been getting the luck this season and it's finally starting to swing. You know, you go back to the Tom Eaton performance, 10 saves, that's absolutely ridiculous. That's going to be more of a, not maybe a lucky performance, but it's a one-in-a-lifetime performance from Tom Eaton. He's not going to perform that level week in, week out, or he'd be at Real Madrid. And that was the sort of luck United were getting there, obviously the West Ham game and the Stoke game. But then you go in now and you're seeing the Sunderland game, and obviously United are getting a look, a goal that was offside that counts. You know, that is football, and I think United will start to see a lot more luck in the new year.
Scorpion kick.
Yeah, it was disgusting. But I think it's sort of showing Mkhitaryan, obviously Armenian born, but spent some time with his dad. His dad was a coach, I think it was Santos, I think. Mm-hmm. Spent some time there, and so did Mkhitaryan. So that's where his style comes from. You see Mkhitaryan as a footballer, he's a Brazilian footballer for me. The way he carries the ball, the way he moves, the way he tries to pull tricks off. His intelligence is very Brazilian, how he sort of saves energy. You know, in the right moment, he'll save energy and then bang, he'll explode into life again. I think that's it's a good trait from Brazilians that they do look like they're lazy, but actually what they're doing is they're waiting for the ball to come to them and then they're exploding, like Ronaldinho used to do. You know, when he's on the ball, that's where he's coming alive. And it's similar to what Henrik Mkhitaryan is doing for Manchester United. And in his last five games, he's been directly involved in five goals. You know, he's just looking so, so good every time he touches the ball. So I hope he's now finally fit and can get a run in the team.
Good point. Interesting point about Brazilians there, Dave. I don't know if I 100% agree with you. I wonder if that's an English person's reading of Brazilians or of that Brazilian side.
I was speaking to, Louis Lancaster, a coach that was working over in China. We should probably get him on the podcast, actually.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting guy. And one thing that he was telling me was, from a coaching perspective, he's like a level, you know, he's level 4 FA and like, you know, UEFA B, I think he's got as well. And he was just talking about this Brazilian lad that they were coaching over in China. And he was sort of saying, this was the thing that's missing in the UK is players that sometimes don't, I think British players expel energy at the wrong time sometimes. You know, you're looking at your wingers, sometimes they're tracking back too much, they're doing too much defensive work, when sometimes they could save that energy up and then use it on the counter-attack. And that's what he said about Brazilian players, is they use the energy at the right time. You know, the likes of Rivaldo was seen as lazy, Ronaldinho was seen as lazy, but they were some of the greatest attackers the world's ever seen. And I think that's quite an interesting thing for English, for British players, that potentially something that they lack is that streetwiseness, in a way that when they were playing in the cage when they were a kid, they couldn't get on the ball all the time. They'd probably get bullied by the bigger kids, but then there were moments where they were on the ball and that's when they should go. That's when they should be explosive. And it's an interesting thing. But I reckon we'll get Louis on to explain that in a little bit further detail because I don't think I've done it justice.
No, good point. I mean, it sort of serves Brazilians in certain positions, maybe not so much in others.
Definitely in an attacking sense.
Very much so. Worth a discussion. Having discussed very recently, or at least not so recently anymore, that documentary will be coming out very soon on Mauricio Pochettino, the evolution of Argentinian football. I'll be interested to see how that contrasts with the others. Chris, are you there? No, fair enough. Dave, let's go on to Arsenal versus West Brom. 1-0 to Arsenal against a side that, I mean, traditionally, they'll struggle against.
I was so annoyed. I'm a big backer of West Brom in fantasy football this season. I've got big Ben Foster in goal, Gareth McCauley, the absolute centre-half legend at the back, and I've got Matty Phillips in midfield. And unlike when I checked the scores, 85 minutes, I'm thinking, Bonds are here, clean sheet, goalkeeper bonuses everywhere for Ben Foster. Matty Phillips is going to get you a 3 points, which you don't expect away at Arsenal. And then, bam, Olivier Giroud ruins my dreams. Ruins on Boxing Day.
Olivier Giroud.
He may be good looking, but did he think about that? When he put the ball in the back of net, did he think I was going to sit there, miserable as hell, after he did that?
You know,
some footballers need to think about the bigger picture, the fantasy football picture, and he didn't do that day, and I was very disappointed with him. I think I'm going to discipline him, find him a week's wages for that.
Oh, you can have those week's wages, Dave. Good God, what we could do with a week's wages of a Premier League footballer is unreal. Anyway, I'm sick of people saying it's a sign of champions. It only works that way backwards. You can't have a sign of champions forwards that way. That's you trying to reassure yourself that being shit and winning 1-0 against West Brom is not a bad thing. It only works backwards when you look back. Because if you look backwards, your only problem is that actually the big problem is that essentially, and I will put it this way, you've gotten rid of all the other sides that only won 1-0, then didn't win the Premier League.
Obviously, it was 1-0 to Arsenal, but you know, Sanchez at the post, they had a number of good opportunities. Ramsey missed a pretty decent chance at the end of the game. But this West Brom team is good. You know, credit to Pulis again for building another very, very solid Premier League side. But you know, Arsenal do have another string to their bow with Olivier Giroud on the pitch. It's a different Arsenal to the Alexis Sanchez Arsenal. And that will win them games. You know, the header was absolutely fantastic. A brilliant goal. So, yeah, Arsenal are pushing on. And after the little sticky patch, you know, they lost to City, they lost to Everton there. Sorry, was it the draw with Everton? No, they lost to Everton. Come on, Dave. Brain, work. But anyway, back in form.
Back in form indeed, Dave. Anyway, let's move on to Burnley 1, Middlesbrough 0. Burnley, Davo?
Yeah, war of attrition. Burnley, like we mentioned before, worst record in the Premier League away from home, but they've done very well at home. And that's something that Sean Dyche has worked on in his second spell in the Premier League. And credit to him as manager, they've got the fifth best record at home in the Premier League, you know, with 6 wins, 1 draw and 3 defeats. So they've done very, very well there. And it's a very difficult place to go. Turf Moor, narrow pitch, very, very small. And they, you know, they nicked the goal and pretty much sat on that and defended very, very well. So, yeah, credit to Burnley and credit to Sean Dyche's organisation of his side. Because it is a team. It's more of a team than one individual that you would say is Premier League standard. You'd say the players are probably in between Premier League Championship, but Sean Dyche is pushing them to that extra level.
Good point. Speaking of a side who looked more Premier League than Championship last season and maybe looked the opposite this season, Leicester, they played Everton. Everton ended up winning 2-0. Dave, are we going to be continually like this season with Leicester sort of thinking,
hopefully in February we can have a little bit of love for them again against Sevilla in the Champions League, but I do expect them to lose that tie. But yeah, they've been found out in a way in terms of their style of under Ranieri, you know, very counter-attacking style, and when you don't give them that space, they struggle. But you know, Everton putting in a bit of a run together as well. I hate it. I was right. Just before Christmas, Koeman was about to get sacked. Bilic was on his way out, and they've both recovered. But fair play to them both, to be honest. You know, you got to stand up, and with Lukaku, they've got a man that they've just got to keep feeding because he will score your goals. And it is potentially it is getting Bolasie back as well, because when those two play together, they do combine very well. Obviously, he's out injured at the moment, so I think it's going to be crucial for Everton to continue this run of form. But Morales scoring a goal and making a big impact in the game as well, so. Yeah, Everton, we'll push them.
Where will Everton finish, Dave?
Sorry. They will finish 11th.
Ooh. And Koeman will stay after that?
No. It's over.
Bob Bradley
will be taken over as manager at Everton.
You know what? He's the American David Moyes. He's not. Oh, wait a minute. No, he isn't.
That was one thing. So the media loves to like jump on the stats. Ooh, Jose Mourinho's not got as many points as David Moyes has in his first season at Manchester United. You know what changed, Lawrence, at the weekend?
Has he got more points now?
Mourinho has more points than David Moyes. See you later.
Yeah. Is that you saying goodbye, or are you literally...
Yeah, I'm out of here.
Okay. Dave, how are you feeling at the end of this podcast? Sick?
Yeah, great, mate.
Sad,
fantastic.
Really. Anyway, hashtag make Dave great again. Hashtag pray for Dave. Hashtag...
Send him some Lemsip in the post.
Send Dave Lemsip.
Send Dave nudes.
Hashtag send Dave nudes. It's a good one. Yeah. Suitable nudes, not... You know what? Let's just leave the nudes. Just park the nudes. Just save him. Save the prayers for Dave. Nudes later when he's feeling better. They're useless. If you don't feel well, there's no point in nudes, are there? Dave?
Waste time, yeah.
Exactly, waste time.
Delete them.
Don't bin them. Like I said, park them for later. We have got a largely male listenership anyway. It would have been useless to you. as far as I know, you and I have shared a room. Anyway, I'm just trying to make it awkward now. Let's move away from the podcast because we're going to finish it there. Dave, thanks a lot for joining us this week.
Cheers, Lawrence.
What are you going to do now? What are you doing the rest of the week?
Probably going to sleep and drink Lemsip
together. Alcohol could
at
help.
The same time. The most annoying thing is I can't taste. So my sister, I went to my sister's for Christmas in Plymouth and she made an absolute killer Christmas dinner with, I think we had turkey and they had duck and, you know, all the trimmings, and I couldn't taste anything.
A bird inside a bird inside a bird.
I sat there with all this bird on my plate and I couldn't even eat it. I couldn't touch any of the birds. It was terrible. And then, you know, I ate that. Obviously, you got to eat it because you got to show face at Christmas. Had a glass of wine. Tasted like I was drinking bloody paint stripper. Because you know when you can only get the back taste, it's like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
And then the next day, right, beef Wellington. Probably one of my favourite things in the world. And this beef Wellington was, I think we bought it from Marks and Spencer's or something like that. My parents were showing it off. And this beef Wellington was unbelievable. It was like rare, like the beef was just perfectly cooked. Couldn't fucking taste it. Really upset me. I nearly cried. And that's been Christmas. But anyway, guys, send me more Lemsips and I'll feel better.
Hashtag send Dave prayers. Not nudes. Hashtag I am the doctor. There's got to be a football person who was known as the doctor at some point, right?
Probably.
Football doctor. Probably best not to Google that. Pep Guardiola did it a few years ago and he ended up in Napoli. Anyway, it's good to have you guys. Thanks a lot for listening to our Christmas special. Christmas analysis wasn't really a special. Adam will be back later in the week. I'm sure he enjoyed Rogue One for the fifth time. 50th time this week. I don't know how many times he's seen it now. He's a film critic, apparently. And Chris, thank you very much for joining us as well at K Hennage, KHENEAGE. Find us on Twitter at The Front Three. Go over and see our YouTube. There'll be some real good stuff there real soon because I've been travelling around Europe. And Dave's been travelling around Britain. As you can see by some of the great analysis, and we'll see you again real soon on The Front Three.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.